Access number 27249, Mr. Tom Tate, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about your time with 29 Operational Training Unit at Bruntingthorpe. And you became recreation officer, and part of your duty was to attend these parties. I'm not quite sure why yet. What was exactly was going on? Why did they need a recreation officer there?
Well, can you imagine in a remote country area, shall we say, agricultural area, there were no men. So they had to acquire men to help in the end to dance. We used to dance. We would have a cold buffet type of meal. We were entertained, and it was really worthwhile. I used to thoroughly enjoy myself being entertained by the ladies. But
that's you being it. What was your job as recreation officer? You see what I mean?
Oh, as recreation officer. Well, my duty really was to not keep order, but to see that, in a way, to help the other people who were invited to keep jolly good order and behave themselves. Which was the responsibility. As far as the entertainment officer was concerned, I...
You didn't actually organise entertainments then?
I didn't. The signals officer accepted invitations on behalf of us, and we carried out those duties. It was a responsibility.
And anything else happening at Bruntingthorpe?
Well, I settled down there and became like a permanent fixture. Because now I discovered later, when I wished to be posted away, when the signals officer told me he had valued my stay there, because he said he relied upon me to carry out my duties in visiting these places to keep my hands to myself. They were the very words he used. And there's no misunderstanding what he meant. He liked men to behave themselves and be credit to the Air Force.
Now, you were at Bruntingthorpe a long time.
I was.
I mean, you know...
And I got to know people, the farmers, outskirts of the boundary of the run of the airfield. I got to know, and I used to be invited by the farmer, his wife, family, and they even used to take me to the market. They allowed me to drive a tractor. They allowed me to drive the tractor when they were picking up the hay and all that sort of thing. They used to rely on me, as they weren't going to be available, to bring in a horse and its offspring, put it in the barn. And I did. Oh, and I even attended the birth of cows, animals, and holding the rope and a little strain on the rope. Oh, I had a jolly, jolly nice. Sociable time.
So why did you want to go back to operations? Because tell me about that. What made you on earth want to do that? You'd done your bit. You'd done 36 missions.
Yes.
No one could point the finger at you, surely.
Yes.
Tell us what was going on in your mind.
That is a very good question. That is a very good question. And I would have thought it might have been obvious in a way to anyone. We had to do two tours of operations before we were finished. Two tours, and I had escaped all this time.
So you should have gone back earlier.
Oh, 6 months is the rest. We only get 6 months. I had all that time. I think I was rather favourite with the signals officers on the place I had been. I think they perhaps appreciated someone who was keen. Yes, I was keen, and I was conscientious, and I always tried to do a good job. No, I wasn't a moan and groaner. I suffered the agonies of being scared stiff, but in the end, you can only be so frightened. However, why did I go back on operations?
You volunteered, though. I mean, did you actually push to get back on?
Well, I only volunteered. No, it was obvious from the press and the media and everything else that the war was really rapidly coming to an end. So by the end of 1944, I realised that the next thing would be possibly, and there was talk of it in the papers, that we would have to go out to the Far East and we would be bombing the Japanese, sort of talk. No mention of atom bombs or anything like that, which was going to finish the war off completely. But I did not want to go out to the Far East bombing. And so John Wynne, a pilot, I heard John Wynne was wanted a crew, and he wanted to get back on operations. This was in December.
Now, how had you met John Wynne? Had he been one of the ones you'd flown for?
No, I didn't know him from Adam, no.
Right, okay.
No, so I was introduced to him, and he said he wanted what they called a special wireless operator. Now, special wireless operator, in this case, was not using wireless telegraphy. It was tuning Radio Hamburg. What is it? Tuning a whole station. Radio Hamburg. These transmitters. Right. Tuning transmitters to a frequency. The idea of the transmitter was at the time when you're ordered to do this, the Germans are using it was to destroy their radar signals so that they could not trace trace the Allied aircraft. They could not track the RAF aircraft. Also, the searchlights were unable to pierce. Were unable to pick up the aircraft, and also their anti-aircraft guns, because their radar was jammed.
So you had a machine to jam, transmitting machine that provided a signal that would jam their radar. That was one. That was your role.
My role. Base would send a message while we're on our way to the target. Base would send our a message which the wireless operator, my fellow wireless operator, would pick up. He would hand it to me, and it would be the frequencies of which I had to set up these transmitters. I set up the transmitters, and that meant to say that until I was ordered to change the frequency or switch it off or change it, we were obliterating the signals of the enemy's radar, preventing their fighters, their guns, and their searchlights to track us.
Right.
And we flew with the main force of Lancasters, the main force of bombers, but we flew 2,000 or 3,000 feet.
Now, let's not run on, because the first thing you do is you go to 1699 conversion unit.
That's right.
As RAF, is it Dalton?
Alton.
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 Right. I can see why I thought it was. Yeah.
Yes.
And this is where you formed a crew, I presume.
No, we formed a crew at Bruntingthorpe.
Right.
So I knew some of the fellows who they were staff. They were staff gunners. They were staff navigator. Staff bomb aimers, yes, they were staff of.
So who was in the crew you formed then?
Who was in the crew?
Yeah.
The names of people.
Is this the crew you were shot down with?
Yes.
Do you remember their names and what they were like as people?
Yes.
Well, let's start with Wynne first. He was the pilot. What was he like? Was it John Wynne?
Are you free to move? Could you give me that on my table there? My table, on the table.
So we'll start with John Wynne. What was he like?
Public school boy, a Welsh hill farmer, and he's about 5 years younger than me. He's about 82, and he's still going strong as a hill farmer, and he's a man devoted to his job, very conscientiously. I felt he wanted to reorganise the RAF because he realised how inefficient the RAF was, how inefficient it was.
A good pilot?
Yes, a very good pilot.
And right, so then there was you, of course, and then there's the wireless operator. Who was the wireless operator?
I can't remember his name just at the moment.
Do you remember any of the other names?
Well, that is the trouble. No, I've rather forgotten the other names. Let's say one of the gunner was Frost. Frost was a gunner.
Was he a sergeant?
Pilot officer Frost.
What was he like?
He was our front mid upper gunner, and he was a conscientious man. He had recently been married. Dreadful tragedy was he'd recently come back from being married, and but he was one of those people conscientiously doing his job without grumbling.
Do you remember any of the others of the crew?
Matthews, Flight Lieutenant Matthews, was our rear gunner.
What was he like?
Well, he was a conscientious man because he had already done two tours and he was doing a third tour. But see, all these few people I mentioned, they're all everyday, normal, conscientious people. Committed to doing their job, doing a good job.
And he was he a gunner as well?
Rear gunner, yes.
And you don't remember the the wireless thing. What about the... did you have an engineer or navigating officer?
We had... flight engineer was Vinyl. The flight engineer was Vinyl, V-I-N-A-L-L.
Well, what was he like?
There again, I can only say he was a very nice man, conscientious, very, very human, helpful, supportive character, yes. But we all lived quietly. We didn't live a wild life or anything like that. You know, you read about what went on in the RAF. These were all quiet, responsible people.
And was there a special relationship between a crew, even a new crew?
Yes, there was. There was a special relationship, yes, because it developed into a very close friendship, and you could talk to each other. You talk about how frightened you are, yes, how frightened you are. And then when you gain more confidence, as we were gaining more confidence, you start then saying, well, that's eight of our second tour done. That's nine of our second tour. How much longer are we going? And you became quite philosophical about the whole thing.
Now, what about what this time you did at Ulton? This was a conversion course. What aircraft were you converting to?
A B-17, the Flying Fortress.
So you'd flown Wellington before, and now this was your second?
This was a different experience, yes.
Now, what did you think of the B-17 Flying Fortress?
Well, it was a very big aircraft, and to be a member of the crew, it was a rather remote experience. In other words, I and the other wireless operator had our own cabin shut in. And we were shut off from the crew, really. Unless, of course, we wished to listen into their intercom conversation. But we had our job to do. And so the time was taken up by concentrating on our own job. So it was a rather big aircraft. In the Wellington, one could walk from the pilot down to the rear gunner without any obstruction, except climbing over the main spar. But in the fortress, I think to get to the pilot, to leave the pilot and walk to the rear, you had to climb under the main spar, which was like getting down on your hands and knees. It was inaccessible in a way, so I never moved out of my cabin.
Could you see from your cabin, or was it just a wall?
No, we were shut in, except no. The rear. We could look rear-wise, yes, we'd look backwards, and I could see our beam gunners there, standing there. And
so you were there in January and February at Alton, and then you went to, is this when you went to 214 Squadron?
Well, 214, that's the conversion unit, and 214 is at Alton on the same aerodrome.
So that's where you, 214 was what, yes, the squadron you were posted to?
Yes. Mm.
And what did you think of 214 Squadron? I mean, what sort of a reception did they give you? They probably knew you.
Well, I think Wynne received an enthusiastic report, but I was always disappointed. Thinking afterwards, I was disappointed. I didn't get a welcome particularly from anyone at all. We weren't welcomed. I think we're rather taken for granted. Oh, you're reporting, you're Tate, oh yes, oh well. Taken for granted. No, I thought it was very, very low key. Another thing, I felt that we weren't given enough instruction in the familiarisation of things at all. Things.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they had a strange idea. For instance, what equipment did the aircraft carry? This was secret. A lot of this equipment was secret. 214 was carrying out more or less, they thought, secret activities to combat the enemy.
What do you mean by that? This is the business about the... did all the aircraft have these jamming devices?
No. Only the Fortress was special. We were called special duties.
And but just your aircraft, or all the aircrafts in 214 Squadron?
All the aircraft in 214 were carrying out special duties, that's right. Accompanying the main force and jamming enemy's radar. Now, the equipment's all supposed to be secret. And I used to ask, what other equipment are we carrying on this aircraft? Is it only us with our transmitters? Is it only us two wireless operators who are involved, really? Oh, no, there's other equipment. It's best not to know anything. Then you can't talk to the enemy about it. So it's all a bit hush-hush in a way. And I felt I wasn't a part of the organisation in a way, you know.
So you and your crew, you don't seem to have been there long before you started on operations.
No, just the conversion. I think the conversion took a couple of weeks or so. What with bad weather, that was another thing.
And then you seem to have done your first operation on the 14th of March.
14th of March, was it?
Yeah, it looks like on Rossitz.
Rossitz, yes.
And then onto the Mannheim area and South Ruhr.
Yes, that was another thing. We were only given a rough idea. But then perhaps that was the type of operation we were doing. We would accompany the main force and we would arrive at the target almost when the main force began to arrive. We'd stay there until the last aircraft had left, so... I suppose it was one of those things. We cruised around.
Now, what were the raids like? I mean, I'm not going to take you through the whole thing. I presume things hadn't changed that much in basic routine, or had they?
I thought they had changed quite a bit.
Take me through the routine, then.
Well, as far as my aircraft was concerned, as far as Wynne's concerned, his duties were just getting me there, special wireless operator, to the target, the other wireless operator to receive messages, pass those messages to me. I set up the transmitters, the frequencies, and etc. And that was the whole purpose of the flight.
You didn't drop bombs as well?
We had no bombs, no. That's why I always felt it was a bit, not purposeless, but we ought to have been doing more. No, our duty was not to carry bombs. Because the transmitters were fairly hefty things. They were, I think, about 1.5 kilowatts or something, which is pretty hefty.
Now, what do you remember then of those raids? What was it like?
I only remember what went on between the other bombers and their bombing, and I discovered what the modern bombing, the precision bombing procedure was compared with when I was operating.
Well, tell us about that. How had things changed?
How it changed. We now had pathfinders. They found the target, and they were assisted sometimes by mosquitoes who went down very low to identify the target, make sure of identifying the target. And then markers would be dropped, various colours indicating various situations, and I was intrigued in listening on the intercom to the pathfinders doing their job, and you would hear them saying, "Now those markers, whatever colour they were, are now southeast," or giving the location of the markers of the target, south, north, or whatever. And in the end, they say, "Right, main force, carry on bombing." And then the bombing would start, and the pathfinders would be away. It was all very efficient, jolly clever. Great credit to the RAF people for mastering that, the master bombers and those people. Excellent, extraordinary. And sometimes they got shot down.
Did your jamming equipment have any noticeable effect on the German anti-aircraft things? I mean, did it actually seem to affect the number of searchlights, anti-aircraft fire?
I think it did. I don't remember suffering anywhere near the amount of anti-aircraft fire when I was with Wynne. But then we were above the main force, about 3,000 feet higher than the main force. So,
were there less searchlights, though?
I mean, I didn't see that. I couldn't see that from being inside. No.
Now, do you remember any of those specific raids? You went on about, it looks like six raids. Seven raids, perhaps.
36 and 8, didn't I?
Yeah, you did
and
seven, and then you failed to return from the one on the 14th of
Luxembourg,
March.
Yes,
but anything about any of the other raids beforehand that you want to talk about? There seems to have been Bremen area, Dortmund, Sassnitz, and then Ruhr.
Being inside the aircraft, I'm afraid I didn't see anything at all. Just the sensations of some anti-aircraft fire, naturally. But I didn't see anything particularly, no.
Now, let's go then through as much as you can remember about the raid where you failed to return. This is on the 14th of March, 1945. With Wynne, and it was on Lutzendorf.
Lutzendorf is an oil work.
Tell us as much as you can about that raid from start to finish.
On Lutzendorf. Well, it was routine in a way. Yes, it was routine. Excuse me, I'm so drunk. It was a routine. We were on the way to the target. I received wireless messages from my fellow wireless operator, and I set up the transmitters to the frequencies required, and then I just sat back quite happy, not particularly worried, and we finally arrived at the Lutzendorf, and I could hear the navigator talking to the pilot about it, and so I knew where we were. He would be telling, but apart from that, nothing really went on at all, except the pilot indicated that we were leaving the target as the bombing had finished, and we were leaving the target, and they then would say, "We're going to fly gradually at loose height. We're flying now at 25,000 feet, and we're gradually going to lose height. He would keep us informed as to what was happening. And everything went jolly well. We didn't expect to be attacked by fighters, unless some stray enemy fighter happened to see us. He could hardly locate us with our equipment on. But there came the time when I was ordered to switch that equipment off. And that was possibly within about 50 miles of the Rhine. Now, the Rhine at that time, in 1945, the Rhine, west of the Rhine was Allied occupied territory, and east of the Rhine was still German occupied territory. So I switched that equipment off then. That meant to say, pilots told us that we were losing height and we were going to go down to 5,000 feet. He had been briefed to fly at 5,000 feet. And we were sailing along quite happily, and we got near Stuttgart, and suddenly we were in anti-aircraft fire. And it was quite severe. Pilot flew on and then said the aircraft had been hit. The oil pressure of one engine, of what port in an engine, the oil pressure had been lost, and he was struggling to keep the aircraft flying. But then he said the aircraft was on fire and we were to prepare to bail out.
Now, what did that entail? How did you prepare to bail out?
Well, prepare to bail out, as far as I'm concerned, was put my parachute on my chest, hook it onto my chest, and shall we say, zip up my clothes, pick up any documents that I had there, but I didn't really have very much, a logbook perhaps, and just prepare to go. To make a dash for the...
Did you have any escape kit issued?
Yes. Escape kit was something we always carried with us. A little package of miniature items. A map, silk map, compass, little things like that. Yes, we did. So I was all prepared, and we are normally prepared. You've got to be ready to go.